The content here is for informational purposes only and should not be taken as medical advice.
Please consult a healthcare professional with any medical questions and concerns.
If you are experiencing an emergency or need immediate help, call 911.
In no way does listening, reading, emailing, or interacting on social media with our content establish a therapeutic relationship.
I just get so angry. It's hard to sit still.
I don't want to be this way.
My brain just feels all scrambled.
Hey, Nikki, here we go.
What?
That's what I was going to ask you. Like, what are we talking about in this episode? Which is episode 52.
All right.
It's complicated.
Yeah, well, so that's the answer. It's complicated. This is, that's it. It's a complicated topic.
Okay, a topic as like complicated life, relationship status. What's complicated here?
No, we called it It's Complicated because we're going to talk about obsessive compulsive disorder.
Okay.
Tourette's syndrome.
Okay.
And attention deficit hyperactivity disorder.
Okay, so that sounds very complicated because that sounds like this could potentially be a really long episode too, because those are three separate conditions, but they all tie together with anxiety?
Yes, so we're not going to do a deep dive into each of the three. So this episode is really going to be more about how those things are often found together in clusters. And so it's a kind of a unique, you know, diagnostic trio, if you will, you know, and some kids will not have all three. They'll just have maybe two of those three disorders. But these combinations are seen frequently enough that we're talking about it. And there's a lot of research going on about it. And it can impact treatment. So we want to talk about it because a lot of people just aren't familiar with the fact that obsessive compulsive disorder or OCD and Tourette syndrome are, you know, they can have some overlap. They can look very similar. And then both of those are often tied to ADHD. So our goal for this episode is to just highlight that so that people can be aware. And then, you know, if they're dealing with any of those three diagnoses in their kids, if there are overlaps, they'll have some idea of what to go and talk with their doctor or counselor or psychiatrist about.
Okay, so we're going to break this down alphabetically and popularity-wise because I think ADHD is probably the most well-known of those three conditions, correct? So when we talk about attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, what are we talking about? Because I know before I was introduced to this, I had one thought of like, you know, the ADHD is the kid who can't sit still, that's constantly fidgeting and moving, and they're hyper, hence the hyperactivity, but it's not necessarily that.
Nope, there are different types of ADHD and it can present in very different ways. And to complicate matters further, you can also have children with symptoms of ADHD that don't really meet the criteria. But the most standard set of behaviors that you would expect if you're talking about ADHD would be kids who tend to be, you know, squirmy, fidgety, move around a lot, forget things, have a hard time following directions, having a hard time with impulse control. Maybe they're not so good at taking turns. Like those are things that you would see if you're just talking about ADHD in general. But there are different types. There's a predominantly inattentive type of ADHD, which some call ADD, and that would be attention deficit disorder. So it's like ADHD, but without the hyperactivity. So this child is going to have a really hard time staying focused, hard time staying organized and staying on task. They might not be able to follow instructions or conversations. They're easily distracted. They may not remember the steps in their daily routine, but hyperactivity isn't necessarily the issue. They're not bouncing off the walls or fidgeting or squirming, but they can't track what's going on around them very well.
But you could also make the argument that their brain is hyperactive. So they're not physically displaying the fidgetiness and stuff, but it's almost like somebody's got a remote control just constantly changing the channel in their brain.
Yeah, that's a perfect description of ADHD with the inattentive type. Now there's the predominantly hyperactive or impulsive presentation of ADHD, which is the kiddo who is a little bit more hyperactive, who is moving around more, who is a little bit more impulsive. They might move around like they have a motor, you know, and they just can't stop. And they're impulsive and grabbing things and doing things that could potentially put them in danger and not really realizing the consequences. They're not great at waiting their turn or, you know, listening to directions. They may be more prone to accidents or injuries because of that impulsive and hyperactive presentation. Mm-hmm. So you can have two kids or three kids or 10 kids all with a diagnosis of ADHD, and they might all look a little bit different from one another because they have different features of it. And so it's important to recognize that not all ADHD diagnoses look the same.
And I remember you saying in a past episode that you think in, I don't remember, it's like 5 or 10 years that there'll be several different diagnoses for ADHD. It might not even be called ADHD anymore. It'll be just several different things because research and everything's going into it.
Yeah. I think we're going to break it down and we're going to be able to identify which parts of the brain are contributing to which features. I think we're going to be able to better treat it because we're going to know, you know, more of what the underlying causes might be. And I also think that's a great tie-in to our subject for this episode, which is that these things all kind of overlap. I mean, mm-hmm. I think we now see the relationships between, you know, lots of different types of anxiety disorders. And then, of course, OCD and Tourette syndrome and ADHD. And it's largely because if we're not thinking of it as a diagnosis, and you just kind of think of children's development in clusters of, you know, like skills and developmental phases that they go through, you know, a kid who has ADHD has a hard time in that part of their brain that's helping them to learn, you know, to focus. So like the frontal lobe, where all of our like learning and information processing and decision-making and problem-solving skills are kind of housed, that part of the brain is just not developing as quickly and functioning as quickly as the rest of the brain. And so I think that's kind of what's going to make it possible to better understand childhood mental health as the research continues, is we're not going to have to necessarily depend on a diagnosis. We're going to be able to go, oh, so it's this set of skills that are missing, and it's because this part of the brain hasn't developed as quickly as this part of the brain.
Gotcha.
And so we'll be able to break that all down one day.
And that will be great, because I know from a parent's perspective, it can be very frustrating when a kiddo acts this way and they can't help it, you know, but it still, it doesn't mean that it's not frustrating to deal with.
That's right.
So we are not doing deep dives in this episode, but we do have a very deep dive coming up on ADHD later this fall. And the end mm-hmm. of September, early October, we're going to do a series on ADHD. So we'll mm-hmm. get well versed in that. We have a special guest that's going to join us for those three episodes.
And there's the third presentation, which is combined. So it's those kids who do have the inattentiveness and the hyperactivity. And that's, you know, that looks, of course, completely different than one or the other. So
yeah. And again, it's working with your primary care provider or therapist to kind of tell which one of those can which one of those is the diagnosis, so you can kind of treat it in a very certain way for sure.
Yep.
So then let's move on to OCD. And again, the stereotypical thing, and what I love about this is we're breaking the stigma, because I think people have this thing of ADHD is the fidgety kids, the hyper kids. OCD, I think people think this is the germaphobe, you know, they've got to have mm-hmm. clean hands all the time, and that can be part of it, but there's so much more to OCD.
Yes, there's so much more. At its heart, obsessive compulsive disorder is when a child or an adult has an unwanted sort of thought or in like an intrusive thought, image, you know, something that runs through their brain, and then a behavior that they feel they must do to kind of counteract those thoughts. And so there's a lot of different versions of this. This can also look very different in kiddos. And it's kind of a sneaky little diagnosis too, because you can not always see it. Like sometimes kids with OCD will hide their obsessions and compulsions. They you may not know that they're having them. You might notice certain things that they do and think, I wonder what that's about, but you don't necessarily realize what's under it. And so I want to break down, you know, an obsession is like the unwanted thought or impulse or image that occurs over and over again, and it causes anxiety or stress. Okay. And the compulsion is the behavior that the child sort of feels like they have to do, say, think, or whatever over and over again to counteract that unwanted obsession. So these two things are tied together.
So this can be something, again, like with the chronic hand washing, or mm-hmm. it could be, I've got to turn the light switch off four times before mm-hmm. I leave, or something bad yep. will happen, yep. or I've got to check the car lock or something. Those are all yes. obsessive type tendencies.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You could have having to have things in a certain order or tapping. You know, I've met kiddos who have to, when they enter a room, they have to count all the squares, or they have mm-hmm. to count the ceiling tiles. You can have checking window locks, checking door locks, checking, you know, stove burners and things like that. Just checking things over and over again. Mm-hmm. Having just anything you have to do over and over. I've seen kids, you know, you have to look behind the door three times before you can walk through it, or you have to look under the bed six times, or, you know, a lot of times there's a number associated with whatever it is okay. they're doing. And it's very much a ritual, and it's different because kids have rituals all the time, right? We have like bedtime rituals, and we have, you know, just different parts of our day we kind of put into a routine
sure.
or a structure. And that's totally fine. That's typical. Kids need those. We've talked a lot about that. But this kind of a ritual is not serving the child in any visible way, right? It's helping to, they think, maintain their anxiety or manage their anxiety, but actually it's maintaining it, because now their brain is like, well, I have to keep doing that thing. Otherwise something really bad could happen. And what might happen is kind of dependent on the kids. So they might think something bad will happen to someone I love, or I will get sick, or I will die, or somebody I care about will die. There might be some really scary thought in their mind if they don't do the thing. And so that's kind of the, you know, the obsessive compulsive nature of it. It just is a cycle.
And so that would add to your anxiety. If I don't check the door lock 5 times, mm-hmm. Someone I love is going to die. Like that's mm-hmm. going to make somebody very anxious, I would think.
Absolutely. And the anxiety that kids feel with OCD is so intense, and it doesn't make sense to anyone else. And the thing is that, you know, young kids aren't necessarily talking to you about it. It's very unusual to find a child that meets a criteria for OCD that is able to freely share their experience, because mm-hmm. there is some shame that's sort of built in, because they know it's not what other people are doing. They realize mm-hmm. there's something about it that maybe they need to hide from other people. And so it's really tough for them. And that anxiety just builds and builds. And you know how, like, when you keep a secret or you have something that you haven't been able to like bounce off of somebody else to make sense of it, it just gets bigger and worse mm-hmm. and darker. And this is kind of what happens in their minds, is that the thing gets scarier and scarier. And it's important to keep in mind that these obsessive rituals and behaviors don't necessarily do anything to improve the health of the child, right? So like if they're washing their hands 50 times a day, that's not making them healthier or safer.
Right.
It's sort of an irrational practice that's designed to try to combat that anxiety, but of course only reinforces it.
Sure. Would you say everybody has a little bit of OCD in them, just like everyone has anxiety, but it's those that have the extra anxiety where it starts to affect your day-to-day life? Because I'll say, and I guess it's a joke, like I've got to have my papers in a certain order on my desk, or this has to be there. So, and you know, people will be like, oh, it's just my OCD, which I would think everybody has a little tendency of it, except for the people on hoarders. Then they're, yeah.
That's a whole different problem.
But that's their obsession though.
That's right.
I mean, it all fits.
It does. But, and so where the way I look at it is that cutoff is always like, is it causing problems in your life?
Right.
And I believe that all of us can be a little bit obsessive about some things. Mm-hmm. I certainly have a list of things I'm a bit obsessive about. Don't get me started. But I'm not obsessive compulsive about them in the sense that, you know, I like the thing. And so then, but then I have to do this in order to correct for that. I just have certain things I want to be in a certain way. My life doesn't come to a screeching halt if I'm not able to do that thing. And so that's where you have to kind of look at the line is like, is it causing problems? Is it keeping this child or this person from enjoying their day-to-day life? Is it preventing them from getting places on time? Is it creating all this like distress that they can't function? Yeah, okay. Then we need to look at a diagnosis.
That's a problem.
You know, I remember, you know, somebody was talking about, oh, I have OCD. I'll only eat the green M&Ms. Well, okay. But it's not OCD because mm-hmm. only eating the green M&Ms, that's kind of a preference, right? That's a thing you like to do. It's your preferred color of M&M, but like you don't have anxiety about it if that doesn't happen. It does, you know what I mean?
Right.
So it's important to kind of know that we all can be obsessive and we can all have preferences. But to truly have OCD, you have to have the unwanted or intrusive thoughts or images or concerns, and then you have to have a behavior that counterbalances that.
And you know what they say about green M&Ms.
I'm not sure what they say, Chad.
Yeah, look that one up. I think too, again, not wanting to deep dive, I think we need an episode on OCD down the lane. And I'm probably going to say the same thing about Tourette's syndrome. But does OCD start to come into other conditions like body dysmorphic disorder or something like that, where someone looks in a mirror and they see what no one else sees? And then they obsess over that. So that seems like it would be related.
And I don't know the research on the connections between body dysmorphia and obsessive compulsive disorder, but I definitely think that the brain functions that contribute to both of those diagnoses are probably parallel. There's probably some similarities there distorted thinking, you know, is definitely at the heart of both. And so whatever's causing one, you know, I would say that a similar factor is underlying the other. And the thing with OCD, and this is where we start to get into what's so complicated about this episode, is that it's very uncommon to have a child with a diagnosis of OCD that does not also meet the criteria for another mental health condition. And so sometimes that could be ADHD. And this is where you have to be really careful diagnostically. And if you've got a child who's struggling with OCD, I definitely recommend like a psychological evaluation with someone who can help really break it down. Because think about it. If a kid has obsessive compulsive disorder and they're spending all of their time like with this intrusive thought and then these behaviors to counteract the intrusive thought, they're going to be distracted, right? Mm, how much attention are they paying? How, you know, they may be moving around more, fidgeting more because they're just so caught up in what's going on in their heads that they can't possibly. And so it's going to be hard to tell. Is that really inattentive, you know, ADHD kind of symptoms, hyperactive kind of symptoms, or are we looking at OCD? Is it both? Is it one or is it the other? And that can be really complicated. So, but it is the main point I was trying to make is that OCD often comes sort of in tandem with other diagnoses. And the purpose of this episode is to highlight that oftentimes those other diagnoses are ADHD or the one we haven't talked about yet, which is Tourette syndrome.
And let's go ahead. You've opened the door. Let's talk about Tourette syndrome.
Okay. So Tourette syndrome is a condition of the nervous system, and it causes people to have tics. And I'm not talking about like the little like bugs that you find in the woods. I'm talking about sudden like movements, sounds, you know, sort of like twitches. It's basically physiological things that are happening over which the person doesn't seem to have any control. So they might be blinking or they might make kind of like a grunting noise. It could be like there's several different types. There's motor tics, right? So movement related. There's vocal tics. So it might be something they do with their voice. Tics can also be simple. It could be just like a simple, like their one eye blinks. Mm-hmm. Or it can be more complex where it's like a series of movements that all happen together. So to have a diagnosis of Tourette syndrome, a person has to have both a motor and a vocal tic, and they have to have that tic symptom for at least a year. Huh. So you can have kids that develop one simple tic and it's maybe short term. If it doesn't carry on or lead into other types of tics, it's not Tourette syndrome. It's just a tic. And tics are tricky because there are medications that can cause them, but the ones in Tourette syndrome typically are not related in any way to a medication. It's typically this neurological condition.
I don't know if I should ask this or not, but I always think because I talked about what I view of ADHD and OCD, but Tourette's syndrome always to me was the people who just yell out random cuss words.
Yes. And I think that's kind of like what the general public, you know, thinks of tic disorder, because those are the ones you notice, right? If you've ever met somebody who has that kind of a tic, it's very memorable, right?
Okay.
But that's just one of many kinds of tics. And somebody who has, you know, a tic where they're saying words probably has a lot of motor tics or other types of vocal tics too. Mm-hmm. And so it's just one piece of the puzzle. And it's, you know, can you imagine living with that, where your body and your voice box, so to speak, just sort of do these things without you being really feeling like you're in control of it and being able to do anything about it. It's just got to be so powerless. I saw a really cool YouTube video, and I very rarely say all those words together in one sentence.
And I didn't edit them together.
Yeah, that's she said impressive. It. Yeah, don't tell my kids. But it was this college student who had a tic disorder. She had Tourette's, and she had all kinds of different tics. And it showed like a day in her life and what it looked like and how the people around her responded. It was fascinating. And I would just say that any child who's been diagnosed, you know, with Tourette's or who has, you know, maybe signs of a tic disorder, just watching that can be so, I don't know, I think it would be really helpful, because you see that she's just like a normal person living her life. And then she's found all these ways to deal with it and that people love her. So it was very uplifting.
There was the show I've talked about before, The Me You Can't See on Apple TV Plus. They do an episode on OCD that was, again, fascinating. And in my opinion, it was hard to watch because it was an Olympic athlete. I think she was a boxer. And so she was as vulnerable as can be. And the cameras followed her, and she had to wash her hands so obsessively. She had to brush her teeth, and then she'd throw the toothbrush away. I forget how many toothbrushes she went through in a year, but that's just how she did it. And it kind of followed her through, and she was getting help, and it helped, you know, she got the help she needed somewhat. She still has OCD, but it was being treated. But it was just fascinating. As I've said many times in this podcast, like the brain, the human brain, just fascinating stuff.
And I'm always fascinated by the ways that people learn to live with these things, right? Yeah. Like all the things that can, you know, misfire or operate differently from person to person. And we deal with it. We learn to deal with it. We come up with ways to be successful and happy anyway. And I just think that's awesome. So, you know, I want to talk a little bit about like the tie-in between Tourette's syndrome and obsessive compulsive disorder specifically, because there's a lot of new research on this. And so I've actually even heard terms like Tourette-ic OCD, where, you know, that's not in the DSM, that's not the official diagnosis, but a lot of specialists who work with these disorders and see them together will use that term to help describe it. And so it's interesting, because I've met children, you know, who kind of have this overlapping set of diagnoses, and it is very difficult to tell the difference between one and the other. And sometimes what looks like a tic might actually be an OCD symptom. It might be like a compulsion based on their obsession. But it can be so hard to tell. And like I said, kids with OCD don't often talk to you about the thoughts and the images that are going through their mind that are supporting their compulsive behaviors. Mm-hmm. And so it can be hard to kind of unpack, what is this and how do we treat it? And that's where you kind of get down to the importance of this, is like these diagnoses are all, I like to call them like man-made or human-made. Like we've created these diagnoses, sure, to describe, you know, clusters of behaviors or symptoms. And the idea is that it will give us an idea of what to do about them or how to work with them or how to help people with them. And so, you know, the differences in treatment for Tourette syndrome and obsessive compulsive disorder are pretty strong. But yet, as we figure out more and more, there's more of an overlap than a difference. And so cognitive behavioral therapy is one of the, you know, most talked about types of therapy, and it has been modified over the years to treat certain things. So there's cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia. There's cognitive behavioral therapy for OCD. There's cognitive behavioral therapy for Tourette syndrome. And they all have slightly different names based on what they treat. But the underlying thing is that they're working with the thoughts that are at the root of the behavior and helping the person to shift their thoughts so that they can shift their behavior. So it's really neat to see the different treatment methods kind of come together and be more effective for kids.
This has to be super frustrating for a parent, because if you think of a 6 or an 8-year-old that maybe has a tic or has an obsessive thought or action, getting into the root of that, because like you said, the kid's not going to tell you, I'm having obsessive thoughts about blah, blah, blah. So what can parents do that can help them?
There's lots of options. I mean, there's some disorders I really think you need to work with a professional to make sure you've got, you know, a solid base of information and some accurate stuff to work with and to try. And I think, you know, OCD and Tourette's are both kind of in that category.
I think ADHD too, for sure.
And the three of these, there's so many options and so many different ways to look at it. And there's also people out there who, you know, will tell you one thing, but then you go to someone else and they tell you something completely different. And that's where it can be extra tricky. So I think part of it is just exploring, you know, who are the professionals in your area who specializes in this? You know, I think that, you know, going to a counselor for OCD is helpful and a good idea, but you really want to find out if that person specializes or has specific training and the types of therapies that tend to help OCD, because you're just going to have a better outcome. You know, therapy can be very difficult for kids. And if what's happening isn't quite what's needed for their diagnosis, it can cost a lot of money and not end up helping. So you want to be kind of particular and ask a lot of questions about the experiences of the people, you know, that you're working with. And so the other thing I would tell parents, and it's kind of it's me arguing with my previous self, but is there's a lot of information out there on the internet. And if you kind of wade through it and you look for reliable sources, I think you can get a really good idea of where to start and also what things to bring up to your primary care physician or your psychiatrist or your counselor, because sometimes it just gives you the language. You can be like, oh, that's what's going on. And I don't want to say that it's not that all kids won't talk about it. Some kids just may not have the verbal skill yet to tell you about, you know, the underlying thoughts or urges or impulses in their mind.
And sometimes it's like, you know, you grow up a certain way and you think what your parents told you is normal, right? And then you get out in the world and somebody's like, wait, what? You do what? And I mean, just to give you an example, I was listening to a podcast with a singer, Kesha, on it. And she was talking about when she was a child, they live kind of in a wooded area. I think she's in Tennessee. And so her mom would make her take a bleach bath once a week to get rid of any kind of poison ivy or ticks, you know, the kind you do find in the woods. Mm-hmm. And so when she got older, it was fiance or something. He was like, what are you doing? She's like, oh, I'm taking a bleach bath. And he's like, why are you doing that? That's not right. That's not healthy, you know? And so she didn't know. She just thought it was normal. So it's like, you know, if you think what's in your family is normal, it's not until you get older that somebody might point it out and go, no, probably shouldn't do that.
And that's perfect, because I think kids with OCD, they have, you know, been doing the thing, whatever it is, the things right. for so long that they don't know. And you know, they may know, I probably shouldn't do that in front of my friends, or if I do, somebody's going to look at me funny, but don't yet have like the verbal comprehensive skills to go, okay, I need to talk to you about this thing. And I don't think other people do it. And I, you know, it just kind of sits there. And so one of the differences between the two is that even though an obsessive compulsive ritual can actually be a tic and vice versa. Mm-hmm. There is a pretty clear difference between a Tourette syndrome related tic and an obsessive compulsive, you know, behavior. So with an obsessive compulsive behavior, there's usually a thought that precedes it. There's something that goes through the mind of the child or the person before they engage in the ritual or the behavior. With Tourette syndrome or any sort of, you know, motor or vocal tic, there's not really like a thought before it. It's not, it just happens. You know, they might feel like a physiological sensation before it occurs. They might be, you know, like this is going to happen and there's nothing I can do about it. But it's not like there's this like high pressure worry or fear or thought or irrational belief or anything that happens. It's not preceded by a thought. And so that's kind of the big difference. And as you're, you know, as a specialist or a psychiatrist or counselor or psychologist are working with a child, they're going to start to look at, you know, what is the child thinking right before the thing happens? And is it a physiological experience? Is it an emotional or a cognitive experience beforehand? And that can help with diagnosis. But what we know is that you can have a child who has tics, but also has obsessive compulsive behaviors. And so you can have both. And not always be able to tell which is which.
And not necessarily a dual diagnosis, but you just said obsessive actions or thoughts, but mm-hmm. a diagnosis of Tourette's or vice versa. Because mm-hmm. I'm sitting there mm-hmm. thinking with anxiety of some things of some kiddos that I know with anxiety that will obsess over their hair or the feel of their clothes, which we've done the episode on mm-hmm. On sensory processing disorders and such. So it's like you look at that and go, is it obsessive compulsive disorder or is it just obsessive tendencies due to anxiety? Mm-hmm. It wasn't really a question, but.
No, it's true. And that's kind of where I was, you know, going earlier when we were talking about, you know, sort of straying away from diagnosis and just looking at the function and the parts of the brain that aren't developing quite right or are developing differently than other kids of the same age. You know, sensory processing disorder and Tourette syndrome and obsessive compulsive disorder and ADHD all share like some similar underlying tendencies. And that is mm-hmm. that the child might be easily excitable and they have a lot of like extra energy. You know, if we go back to some of our early definitions of anxiety, right? These are kids who are just like extra super prepared for danger, right? And I think we can take each of these other diagnoses and go, okay, so the brain is sort of giving the child more of something than they need, you know, as it's trying to continue to develop. And so a lot of people ask like, can you grow out of these disorders? And mm-hmm. yes. And, you know, okay. all three of them, you can, as kids with ADHD grow up, you can start to see those symptoms shift. And maybe they always have a little bit of the ADD part or the inattentive part, but the hyperactivity tends to calm down. But then there's also, you know, grown people out there who still walk around and would meet the criteria for the symptoms, but they've found sure. a job or a line of work that allows them to function very well. And they don't think of it as a problem. And I think that's a really important part of childhood mental health is instead of like, you know, what is wrong and finding the problems, going, okay, well, this is really tough, but look how much this child excels in this area because yeah. of this way that their brain works. And so OCD is kind of the same thing. In my professional, you know, clinical experience, I would say that most people who have a diagnosis of OCD in childhood are probably going to experience some version of anxiety at different points throughout their life. The OCD may fade over time, like with treatment or just growth and further development, but there's probably going to be some part of their life where they're a little more anxious. And I believe that's just kind of hardwired in. And with Tourette syndrome, there's not a cure. It's a neurological disorder, but many people have tics that don't get in the way of their daily life and they learn to kind of compensate for them. But there are also treatments that can help them, you know, kind of counterbalance them and you know, essentially eliminate the problems from their daily life. But you can also kind of grow out of it a little bit. Like as you get older, they can fade. But you can also meet adults with Tourette syndrome. So it's I mean, basically the short answer to all three of these is
it's complicated.
Yeah, it's complicated. You can still have an adulthood or it might get better before the end of adulthood. It is just like we said in the title. It is complicated.
My son's primary care provider we had when we first started down this journey mentioned it. He did not include Tourette's, he included depression, but he said depression, anxiety, and OCD, it's like a Venn diagram. And then once I got over my PTSD from geometry class, and he could explain to me a little better, that if you think of the Venn diagram and each of those three disorders are a circle, they all overlap. Once you start treating one, the other one might flare up. So you treat the depression, anxiety pops up, you treat it, and then OCD comes up. So that's kind of my advice for parents too, is watch as you grow up, you know, are you growing out of it? Are you getting mature? Or is it just you've handled this one better and then start watching for other things to flare up?
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. And really, you know, not getting caught up in, you know, we're trying to get rid of OCD. Well, you know, look for the best treatment options. And actually, I haven't mentioned the most important treatment option for OCD. I would be very in trouble if I forgot to mention this. So exposure and response prevention. So ERPT is the treatment of choice for obsessive compulsive disorder. And the way that that works is basically it prolongs the child's response to the initial stressor or the initial obsession. So it's like they have longer and longer periods of time between the obsessive thing and the compulsive thing. And so over time, their internal system goes, oh, well, I didn't die, you know, or mm-hmm. that wasn't the end of the world, or I can handle that. And they start to develop the ability to stop that impulse before it gets carried out. And so, you know, that's a very specific type of therapy. And it's important that if you're seeking that you find someone who's been trained in that, because that's the most effective way to treat it. And actually, one more thing on treatment, it's each one of these diagnoses can be treated with therapy or with medication or with a combination of both. And it's important to work with, you know, clinicians and psychiatrists and doctors who are comfortable with that, because it can take a while to find the right combination for your child, but there is relief available.
And I would say with the ERPT is what I got from the acronym, is make sure you're doing that with a professional. Like, don't just try that at home, because I would imagine that kiddo would be terrified if you go, you know, you have to flip the light switches 9 times. Well, we're just going to do it 7 times today. Like, that's got to be tough to handle.
Yep. And I think that's such a good point, because I think so many people who have never struggled with OCD, who don't really know how intense that anxiety is underlying mm-hmm. it, can think like, well, it's no big deal to do this. And but it is, it's terrifying. Mm-hmm. They legitimately feel like something terrible is going to happen. And so putting your child through that without the proper, you know, training and supports in place is not what you want to do. So find a professional who is experienced with that.
And then remember too, that, you know, you as the parent are going to have to deal with what comes after that, whether it's a panic attack or anger or frustration. So you're also saving yourself a little bit of a headache there too.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
All right, Nikki, as we wrap up this episode, then kind of give us, you know, a wrap up.
Okay. Well, the wrap up is it's right where we started. It's complicated. So
touché.
Each diagnosis is its own thing. And yet there are very much, you know, pieces that overlap with one another, and it can make diagnosis more complicated for, you know, for you and for your family in figuring out what's going on, and thereby making it a little harder to find the treatment that you're looking for. But the positive here is that there are several treatment options for each diagnosis, and there is a lot of research ongoing to help figure out even more treatment options for these kids who are struggling with these types of disorders.
Which is very good. A heartfelt thank you to everyone out there, because we just found out that we've been downloaded in all 50 states. We were in the lower 48 for a while, but we got Alaska and Hawaii. We still, if you know anybody in Puerto Rico, let them know. And it's also global. And I find that so interesting that people find this little bitty podcast we do out of our basements all around the world. But it again just goes to show that it is a global problem. And the whole point starting the podcast was to start that conversation. And that conversation continues with you.